Welcome to The Waggle, presented by Sport Clips, the official podcast of the Canadian Football League.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to The Waggle Podcast. Welcome to The Waggle Podcast, where it is not the off season anymore. It is officially the preseason. We have people in pads playing football. We have a CBA that is being ratified, so we're not going to get into that fully this week. That will be coming in the weeks ahead on this very podcast. We'll break that down for you with all the stakeholders who are part of making the deal. I'm Donovan Bennett. I am with David Sanchez, who has his voice this week.
Back. My voice is back.
It is back, and football is back, Davis, and training camp is the time of year where your body, because you're not that far removed from playing, still feels like, hey, I should be getting into camp. Is that true, or are you all the way done?
No, I'm all the way done. It's, you said there we're back in pads now. They're kind of in pads.
True.
Which, yeah,
we thud tempo.
Yeah, we could toss that around about how little or much we need to be in pads, but if I could be the old grumpy man on sitting on my stoop right now, these kids sure got it easy.
With the shells?
The shells and the five double days and all that good stuff.
Helmets optional for second practice.
Wow, that's
baseball hats like it's walkthrough.
That's some Don Matthews stuff right there.
The worst part of training camp as a collegiate player, and I assume it was the same for you as a pro, was that second practice where you had to put that equipment back on.
No doubt. No doubt.
It was wet. It didn't smell the best. You just had your first practice. You killed it. You went to lunch probably around the time that your second practice was scheduled. If you were me, you had the itis, like it was time for a nap. And then you had to go back into the heat to practice again. That was the toughest part of practicing in pads in training camp.
The best thing that Mark Trestman was the first one to bring this, at least that I had seen in Canada, first time I had done it, with was those split practices. So that was, I believe, 2008 was the first year that I saw that, where it wasn't the pure double day of practice for 2 hours, then you have a 3 hour break, and then you go back out into the field. That, like, splitting the days in half. Instead, we would take a 15-minute break, have your fruit, your water, your bananas, your whatever you need, get back out there.
Orange slices.
That huge difference. That was game changing because you still got the same amount of work in. You still got the break on your body, but trying to rev the engine back up after it's going and having an hour nap or working out or whatever you do in between practices, then trying to go back out there. Forget about that. I never had to do what you're talking about, the wet equipment or the stinky equipment. Fortunately, we had people, we had fresh gear we got to put back on. I'll put back on your same jersey. I don't know where you played at, where they made you wear your same under, or you couldn't do your own laundry or bring two t-shirts to change into.
But what about your pads?
Your pads don't smell. Your pads smell?
If you're working hard, they do.
If you're working, here we go with this BS. Anyway, anyway, camp's underway. Try to get out to a couple camps and see these boys flying around live and in person. There's a certain, camps usually are not, unless it's in Saski, where I saw a pretty good crowd. Camps are usually pretty quiet. Not a ton of people out at camp watching, but that, it's kind of like a, you know, I don't want to say it's a, it was a eerie silence, but it's kind of quiet out there. Guys flying around, you can hear a lot of the chatter. You can get up and close. That's one of the good things about getting out to camp, is you have an opportunity to see guys actually working. Because once the season starts, you're not gonna have the same. Guys don't compete during the season. It's more, you know, jog through tempo a lot of the time, especially the vet guys and the starter guys. So if I want to get a chance, or if anybody wants to get a chance to see some of their guys, some of their favorite players working, or guys getting after it, the camp's a great time to do that. And especially if you can get there on a double day, you can get there and catch two practices in a, you know, 4 hour period. And I enjoy that.
I will say too, if you are a media member, maybe a junior media member, an aspiring media member, maybe a college media member. Camps are a good time to go out and try and pitch some stories to the local PR, pitch some stories to the players. If you get some access, get some quotes. Camp is when people are relatively relaxed. Everybody's undefeated. Everybody's feeling good. Try and do that on a short week later in the season. It's a little bit tougher. So what I love about the league is, you know, a lot of young people like me coming up through the game, you know, they cut their teeth covering teams in their local community as well. A good time to start to build those relationships is in training camp and not later in the season. The fascinating storylines for us in the media.
Can you recall that? Can you recall anything that you did when you were the first things you did as a young buck? Anybody you covered, stories you did in your when you were cutting your teeth?
I do. So it was when I was coming out. First thing I did was I covered the draft. So I helped the show CFL Snap at the time, which was a show on The Score, a weekly CFL magazine show. Imagine that. I helped them with their draft coverage. And then in training camp.
How much did they pay you?
Zero, zero, zero.
Was that Dwayne Ford and C-Ball?
That was D Ford and that was C-Ball. But then C-Ball was the Jeffersons moving on up. And he went to TSN shortly thereafter. So they had Craig said Sony as a host for one season, Sid Sixero as a host for one season. Then Dwayne Ford decided he was moving on up and went to TSN, and then the show died shortly thereafter. But I covered the draft, and then into training camp, I covered a couple dudes that that I played with. I covered Fantuz, and you know he was looking good in camp in Saskatchewan. People were like, oh, this is a Canadian kid. He's going to start for us right away. He's looking really good. So, of course, he went on to have a great career.
I sure did.
I covered, what else did I? Oh, and I did a piece. I went to a couple different CFL cities, and then I did a piece on the Canadian quarterback, or lack thereof.
Okay.
And just talked to Eric Tillman, talked to Jim Barker, and just kind of broke down kind of where the quarterback has been. In terms of development in this country, where it's going, and you know how far away were we from seeing, you know, someone established on a roster potentially starting, and now we got kids being drafted.
So right now, all these media members writing stories and talking about the Canadian quarterback, they're just way late to the game because DJ was breaking this type of stuff a long time ago. Is that what you're saying, DJ?
100%. I'm not a reporter. I'm not a journalist. I'm not a writer. I'm not a broadcaster. I'm a vanguard. I'm setting the trend. It's great. Now
I'm obviously not a writer either because I don't even know what a vanguard is. So
can you spell vanguard?
V-A-N-G-U-A-R-D.
Correct. See, I mean, you've got great fundamentals in phonics. It's like someone who paves the way, right?
Okay.
Who sets the trend, trendsetter, if you will.
Okay.
He's on the cutting edge, an influencer of sorts. Anyways, we are quickly off topic. No, we got Chris Merchant, who's going to camp with the Owls. I mean, the Argos have more Canadian quarterbacks than they do American quarterbacks at this point. So, yeah, it's great that, that you know, we've come pretty far in terms of that conversation. At that point, it was talking about getting kids into camps, getting them experience. Now we have an internship program with U Sports where, you know, in every camp there's going to be a Canadian U Sports quarterback that people are really, really high on. And that's not even to talk about the dudes down south in the NCAA who are doing their thing. Training camp from a media standpoint for me is fascinating because late in camp, the conversation is going to be about cuts. But to start camp, the conversation is about position battles. Who is going to win their spot? Who is going to practice so well that you get lots of reps and lots of looks in the two preseason games, whether it's a half or a quarter here or there? And then who's going to be able to do the most with that to make sure that they make the roster, make the dress roster, potentially start?
It's only one quarterback battle that's intriguing. Am I missing one?
Oh, no. Well, I mean, now one isn't one. I see, it's a great, great point by you because there is only one on the list. It's number one, quarterback battle in Ottawa. Who is the quarterback? But I think there should be another one on the list.
Which one? So we know the Ottawa one. Which one do you think should be a battle?
The one down the 401 in Toronto. Now, the head coach has come out, as you mentioned to me before we taped, okay, and said there is no quarterback battle. Okay. Said that he has a starter. That is James Franklin.
So why? I thought that was, I was, when I heard that, I really don't like when coaches play that it's an open competition card to try really? To seem like they're fair. I don't like it because it, you know darn well in 97% of these cases. Well, how about this? Tell me the last time when we thought that there was a quarterback controversy, we knew who the starter was going to be, and the world was shocked by who the starter ended up being. We always know who it's going to be. You know James Franklin, if he's healthy, is going to be the starter. So why not take that pressure off of his plate, allow him to lead whatever way, whether he's a quiet leader, whether he's a rah-rah guy, whatever type of leadership role he wants to take with his team, allow him to take that and there not be any ambiguity between, you know, to decide on who's the actual leader of this team. Like, why not let him just be that guy? And I liked what Corey did. I will tell you the advantages of what I feel are the advantages of naming the starting quarterback. And then you tell me where there's a disadvantage to it. So the advantage is, like I mentioned, the leadership part. It allows James Franklin to take, if he's going to be the guy, to take hold of the room and lead the way he needs to lead. It also allows that offensive staff, it allows those guys to coach who's going to be under center. Now, you're going to coach all four guys, but just reality is in pro sports, you're going to spend a little more time with the number one guy. You don't have to sugarcoat it and make sure that everyone's getting the fair reps and everyone's. You can say, look, I want to get this look on the cards. This we have a four deep on card number three. I want James. I want you to take this rep. I want you to see this. That's some of the things that happen. You only get a certain amount of carded looks. You get a certain amount of things you want to get. You want to give it to the guys who you think, and I want you to run this route with Darrell Walker. There's just certain things that you need to do where you don't have to dance and tiptoe around it. And you just be, you're the leader. You break us down. You take the first rep. All these things that can clarify things for your football team, because the reality, DJ, you just want to win football games, and I think this gives you the best opportunity to do that. What are the advantages of making an open competition?
If you have a proven commodity,
do you think they play harder when they're battling?
Ricky Ray, Kevin Glenn, sure, I get it, right? Your resume speaks to me. I know what I'm getting when I put you on the field. The rest of the guys who are looking at you know what they're getting when you're leading in the huddle. You don't have a proven commodity. You've got a stock or a bond that's pretty immature. I need you to prove it to me. This is a business where it's about production and performance. Potential gets you beat and gets coaches fired. And so if I'm setting the tone at the quarterback position, the most important one in the sport, I want to make sure that everyone in the locker room knows that guy earned that spot. We trust him because he put the work in. Not because he got paid the most, not because of something he did for another franchise, something that he did in this offense, on this team, right here, right now. And that's going to trickle down to every other decision I make on my roster, because we are going into any game with the best dudes who are the most prepared, most healthy, most ready to succeed and dominate at any given time. And that starts with the guy who's slinging it. So, yeah, the GM traded assets for James Franklin, then re-signed him. So as a coach, you want to make your boss happy. You're going to co-sign what your boss says. But as a player, I don't care. I'm not spending any of his bread. I want to make sure who's going to get me my bonus if I'm Darrell Walker. Who's going to get me my bonus if I'm an offensive lineman and I want to get to the conference finals or a Grey Cup. So I think James Franklin is the best guy, but let him prove it over a two-week span.
Point taken.
Let us know what you think. Holler us at Twitter. The Waggle is here for you. This is an interactive space. We're not experts. I mean, Davis is an expert. I just act like one. Let's talk about the actual quarterback battle, that it literally is a toss-up in Dominique Davis and Jonathan Jennings in Ottawa. As close as I expect the East to be, that's not a decision they can afford to get wrong, I should say.
Yeah, is there is there a right or wrong decision? I mean, I have
lesser
to,
of two evils.
Well, you have to think from my perspective, Dominic Davis, and in this article on CFL.ca, they do say that Dom Davis has the lead going in, and it makes sense to me because he's the guy who has the most experience with the offense. Now, yes, the offensive coordinator from last year is gone, but the reason they promoted from within is so that Winston October and Bo Walker, these guys can continue the continuity they had with this offense, and Dom Davis has reps in the offense. When I look at this team, though, it's going to be a different, although the system might be the same, it's going to be ran differently because neither Jonathan Jennings or Dominic Davis are the three-step, quick pass game type quarterbacks, skill set wise, that Trevor Harris was, and that's what you saw. You saw, you know, five wide, Trevor Harris get the ball out of his hands quickly, and he had massive command of the offense, and this is what they did. Now you're missing your two of your top three receivers. The quarterback is gone, who ran that offense. I expect the quarterback who will win this job will be the quarterback that can extend drives, the quarterback that can make plays with his legs, and the quarterback who can keep this team alive as the defense will carry this team over the first half of the season until the offense gets to the point where it needs to be.
It's funny you say that because your description in that quarterback and what they need to do sounds like what a quarterback in another training camp battle did in the same division, Antonio Pipkin. That's really what
Tony
he did.
P?
Tony P. Tony Parker's playing for the Alouettes.
Tony P.
Now that he retired from the NBA. Listen, his numbers were not spectacular, but he gave that defense some belief, kept them on the field, extended drives with his legs, extended plays with his legs, and I think that if Verdun Adams Jr. got settled in a situation with some half-decent receivers, with some consistent coaching, with a run of good health, he could be an exciting CFL player. He profiles like someone who could make up for the fact that he doesn't have a lot of stature because he's got a lot of moxie, and for his size, he has a big arm. But I think Tony P in Montreal comes in as the betting favorite, if you will, and in our article on CFL.ca, I think he is the favorite just because the way he was able to turn around their season a year ago. No disrespect to Jeff Matthews, Matthew Schultz. I think that's a two-horse race in Montreal as well. And the other reason why I think I like the competition is because if you say day one, okay, yo, it's Tony P's job, or it is Dominic Davis's job, or it's James Franklin's job. If they don't play well, now you got to go to plan B. And now you got to look to your entire team and be like, oh, okay, well, I mean, he's all right, but he's not real. We got to go in a different direction. Or if you keep it 100 that, listen, this is a competition. It's fluid. Whoever's competing at the best at that moment is the person who's going to start. Then when you make a change, it doesn't seem like it's a knee-jerk reaction. It seems like it's a promotion. You know what I mean?
Okay, so one of the things you said earlier, you were talking about, and I've been thinking about this because I heard Antonio Pipkin, Tony P, speaking this week, and he said he was excited about this offense because of all of the playmakers they have at wide receiver and the guys' ability to make big plays, and he loved those guys. He was talking about Eugene Lewis. He mentioned, obviously, DePosey that they got in free agency, and then B.J. Cunningham, their leading receiver coming back. So I have a question. I'll pose this to you. Is there any team, because you mentioned playmakers and you mentioned the talent that they have, or if they have the talent, is there a team in this league when you look at every team, and people always say, oh, they have a lot of playmakers, they have playmakers. How do you judge whether a team has playmakers or not? Because you look on a roster, every roster has a group of guys, a handful of guys that have the ability to be playmakers. The only way to judge these guys is versus other teams' playmakers. So how does this group match up against the other playmakers in the league, because that's the only way you can really measure these guys. And when I look at this roster, I like DeVere Posey. I like B.J. Cunningham. But after that, there's still guys that Eugene Lewis has shown that he can be a capable guy. I mean, Adarius Bowman is a vet. They just released Ernest Jackson. The cupboards are fairly bare after your number two and a half guy, unless Adarius Bowman can prove he gets back to the old AD, or somebody, one of the young guys that we don't know, steps up. So I still look at a team that I like what they've done with their offensive line, but the playmakers, if you're talking about the quarterback and what Tony Pipkins can do or what Vernon Adams can do, I wonder if they have enough playmakers.
I also lose playmakers in the backfield this offseason, so don't expect their running game to be better. As you mentioned, Ernest Jackson not walking through that door. Another playmaker that is not going to be in a situation that surprised me was Jalen Saunders in Hamilton. Is he a guy who may, you know, get a second lease on life in Montreal? That would be a great fit, but you're right. They don't have enough explosive talent when you look at their two deep in comparison to still what they have in Hamilton, what you have in BC, even with some losses, what you have in Calgary, what you have via free agency in Edmonton. I think either of those quarterbacks, whoever wins the job, will need some help to keep the job and be able to keep the chains moving and staying on the field. Again, CFL.ca, take a scroll down the page. We've got 15 position battles for you. Davis is upset because he didn't get to promo it, and I did. What other position battle on this list intrigues you?
I look at the running back situation in Hamilton, and that, I don't know if it intrigues me, but what in the world are the Ticats doing moving Jackson Bennett to running back? I was told last year that by guys on that squad that they felt like Jackson Bennett was talented enough that he could have played half. He could play halfback or Sam linebacker. He was that talented of an athlete, of a DB, and we know his passport. He's Canadian. So why would you move that guy to running back? Well, the only reason that I could see, unless the guys were blowing smoke about his defensive back skills, the only thing that I could see is that once you got rid of Alex Green, once you cut Capicotti, it told me you were going American at defensive end, and you were switching your ratio. You draft Malik Irons, so now you have Sean Thomas Erlington, Malik Irons, and I guess the reason that you're moving Jackson Bennett over to the offensive side of the ball is because you want some depth at that running back position. So I don't know if it's a competition here. It's Cameron Marshall is said to be the favorite. I don't think he is the favorite because I believe this is going to be a national position. And I wonder, that swap is the biggest thing for me. Could you imagine a guy going from defensive back in professional football to a running back and it making any sort of sense, or him having any sort of impact on the game?
Keyword is in professional football. Like, you see that all the time in high school, often in the collegiate ranks, but hardly ever in the pros, unless your coach is Chris Jones. Which it's
running
not in
back
Hamilton.
Though DB to running back.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I mean, listen, you need to put a little more respect on his last name. Everybody knows that anyone with the last name Bennett is a great running back off top. But the running back position in Hamilton is going to be the war of 1812. It is going to be Canada versus USA. Who is going to win out? Because the best back in that backfield, if we're just talking about gaining yards and scoring touchdowns, is Cameron Marshall. But the best decision for that roster, as you alluded to, might be to play Canadians in their backfield. It'll be interesting to see if the addition of former all-star offensive lineman, that's a Canadian, Chris Van Zyl, changes that perspective. If you're going even more Canadian on the offensive line, which may allow you to stay American with your tailback. But Malik Irons and Sean Thomas Arlington should be best friends. They should be cheering for each other. There should be no crabs in the bucket situation, because the success of one guy directly impacts the success of the other. And this will be an interesting decision, especially because a guy in that building who seemed to be intrigued, interested, thought his play calling was nice enough to go Canadian at that position was June Jones. Nobody loved Sean Thomas Arlington in that building more than June Jones. Thought he was a great route runner. Mm-hmm. I thought he was a smart kid and picked up the offense quickly. He profiled to be someone who was strictly a special teams guy. And when June Jones got there, he's like, no, I'm not. I mean, I don't know any different. I'm going to put you in some sub packages and see how you do. And he did well. So now that June Jones isn't there, we'll see how that roster shakes out in terms of who is getting carries off the top. If anything, preseason games are great to see who is playing with whom, mm-hmm. and how many snaps they're getting. And I think that will be instructive in terms of what they end up doing with their ratio this coming season.
Offensive line in Winnipeg, is a battle for that in those interior spots. We all know that they lost two guys in their interior last offseason. So you have five guys competing for three spots. And with Couture, Gray, Speller, Drew Desjardins, the draft pick, and then Pat Neufeld, you really need – it's a competition to see who starts, but you realistically, for those three spots, and this is why Canadian offensive linemen, there's so many of them drafted, and it's such a high priority, because if you're dressing three – in that interior, you really have to have four, because someone's probably going to get injured in camp. There's usually not all are going to make it through healthy. So right there, you're going to have four guys who are likely going to be starters / IR type guys who are going to be, you know, in the starting rotation plan, I believe. And then you need to have that sixth offensive lineman will be another Canadian. So right there, you need five guys at those six guys. So you really, it's a competition, but I believe all those guys will play a pretty important role. Maybe one of those five guys, Couture, Gray, Speller, Desjardins, and Neufeld, will be an IR guy. The rest of those guys will be either legit IR, you know, one guy on the injured list because he's hurt, and one guy might be a six game or an IR guy. But all those guys are going to play, and that's a good problem to have those five guys competing for those three or four jobs.
Yeah, with Goosen retiring and Suk Chung moving out west to BC, that gives them a real, real critical need in the middle of their offensive line. I'm going to take Desjardins out of this conversation. I know people feel like he is pro-ready relative to the other prospects, but to me that just means that he's going to dress. I don't think he's going to start from day one. Very, very rarely do you have Canadian offensive linemen start from day one. He profiles to me as someone maybe at the end of the year, if you've got some injury situations, he could fit in for you in a jumbo package. You know, he could consume that amount of data and be able to play for you. But I think the real truth of the matter is, all these guys are going to play for them at some point, given the attrition at that position in terms of injury. It's just a matter of who plays to start and who plays where. The musical chairs, you're right, of the offensive line interior in Winnipeg will be fascinating. They're a program who is not averse to playing an offensive guard that is American. So we'll see again how they utilize the roster. And the reason why you need to hit home runs in the draft, specifically if you're going to spend draft capital on Canadians at skill positions like they have, is because it gives you a little bit more flexibility on what you do on your two lines in terms of how you utilize their Canadians. And that flexibility will be very, very valuable this season as they try and piecemeal an offensive line together as they lost two studs.
How about the running back position in BC? That's of interest. I believe that's going to be a by committee type job. I know talent wise, they would have gone out and got some some pieces to compete in training camp. But right now, John White and Brandon Rutley to me will be the guys who will lead that competition. Rutley more of a quick shifty guy, and John White is a downhill physical runner. When John White's healthy, and this is talk about repetitive, I feel like I've been saying this for three straight years. When John White is healthy, he could be as good as any back in the league. Now you could just pull that. You could pull that audio, and you've heard me say that, you know, 16 times over the last 3 years. And there's probably a lot of backs like that. But John White's a talented little dude. He's powerful, quick. The question is he healthy and is he in shape? Because when he is, John White could be one of the best backs in the league. That's how that battle will go out. Jamil Lyles, too, they got from the young Canadian. I don't think he's going to be in the mix for that starting job, but I'm interested in Wayne Moore as well, another Canadian. I'm interested to see at least how those guys shape up in the preseason. Hopefully see them get to tote the rock a bit and see what they can do. Why get rid of Tyrell Sutton last year, the Lions, though? They talked all fall when it came to getting close to playoff time. All you heard about was how this was the guy, he changed the mentality of this team. He changed the identity. He's physical, just like Ed Hervey and Ed Hervey wants, and he's the guy you need back there. And everyone kept talking about how the identity of the team changed when they got Sutty over there. And then, I mean, I know it was probably a contract situation, and Sutty's in his early 30s and went to Toronto. But still, you wanted him so badly, it seemed like. At least you said that. And then it was easy to let him go in the offseason.
Well, whether it's Tyrell Sutton or Jeremiah Johnson, my question about that battle, about that position in the league, and it's not just them. We Ottawa basically said goodbye to a back that is even better. My question about that battle is, yeah, it's interesting, it's fascinating. Who wins doesn't matter. Name me the all-star running backs that Mike Riley has had throughout his career. Like, if you have an elite quarterback, and it pains me to say this, as part of the running back committee, the running back is replaceable. And so it doesn't if you have a nice offensive line, doesn't matter who is 7 yards deep. Quiet is kept. I don't think it does. And so when most of the league is saying, yeah, we're going to find a guy who is good until he's healthy and not good anymore, and then we'll find another guy. They're replaceable. The franchise who's gone the opposite direction and is not listed in these training camp battles, because I suspect some of these dudes are not going to be on the roster by the end of training camp even to battle, is the Toronto Argonauts, who have said, hey, running backs, come here. We've already paid Wilder. Sutton, let's go. Rainey, who will tell you is not just a running back, he's offensive weapon. Burks, who had a massive preseason last season, maybe had the highlight of the preseason, reversing field with a crazy touchdown run at UFT. And then they got Mercer Timmis, who got some snaps with the Tiger Cats down the road and was a beast in college. The Argonauts are like, yeah, listen, we're playing Madden over here. We're grabbing all of the great running backs, like this is fantasy football. But I think the rest of the league in BC and Ed is hip to this, where it's like, yeah, I don't think it really, really matters that much. I'm not going to lose sleep on who my running back is, because ultimately, if I have a great quarterback, whoever that guy is going to be that much better.
Yes. Players who are solidified definitely can't believe that preseason games are a week away. I don't know how much these vet guys are looking forward to after 5 days of camp having to play in a preseason game, but that's the way it is. And these young bucks are for sure ready to rock and excited to get going. Another one of the battles I wanted to mention here quickly, I think, which is one of the more intriguing battles, is the linebacker spot in Calgary and the departure. Two of their three linebackers are not there. Jameer Thurman and Alex Singleton gone. Jamar Wall will be back at that Sam spot, but two guys are gone, and Corey Greenwood, I think Wynton McManus and Corey Greenwood will be the two guys who would lead the charge for those spots. Obviously a Canadian and then an international, a national and international in those two. McManus, you saw him on teams last year, a guy who was athletic and has earned the right to take the first reps and to get the first crack at that job. Corey Greenwood, a Canadian with NFL pedigree, who is he's 32 or 33 years old. I think he might be 34 years old even. But anyway, Corey Greenwood, a vet guy who has had some injury issues, but if healthy, like I said, a Canadian who has NFL pedigree, spent time down there, and could be a very good player if he turns 34 shortly here. So that's Corey Greenwood. But yeah, he's a guy who's obviously smart, can play the game, and if you get a national that has that experience and could step right in instead of having to play a draft pick, I think that's a win. But it'll be interesting to see how that plays out, because you have a defense with a new defensive coordinator and missing six or seven starters or rotation type players on that Calgary defense. So that's going to be those two spots will be important, just as same with the field side of that defense as well. It looks like there'll be two new guys out there too.
So I want to hear your take on some comments that were made in that province, not by a linebacker, by a quarterback. But before we get to that, I mean, you mentioned Trestman and how innovative he was in terms of bringing those kind of caddied practices together with a short break in between. You got more time off to, as a player, run some errands, but also take care of your body, masseuse, maybe some acupuncture, maybe some yoga, making sure that in camp you've got time off your feet. What do the coaches always say, Davis? Get off your feet.
Get off your feet.
Right? Making sure that you can do that because you've got more free time away from the facility during training camp, which is imperative. But when you're talking about taking care of your body, it's not just those feet. It's not just that back. It's not just your physical body. It's also the top of that body, that head. You got to go to Sport Clips. If you are in training camp, you got that extra time. Now is the time when you're taking your photo at the beginning of the year. You want to make sure that you look good on CFL.ca and your bio shots and your hero shots that are going to go on TSN. You got to make sure you are looking A1. So what do? Well, if you're listening to this podcast, you go to CFL.ca/thewaggle and you're going to get that first time customers only experience. Yeah, I'm talking to you, CFL player. So we got you. Go get that shoulder and neck massage, what you need, even though you don't hit anymore. You still need them. Make sure you get that trim, that MVP experience, so that you can be the MVP of training camp like you want to. No matter where you are in this country, you can go to sportclips.ca to figure out where the nearest location is to you. So you're spending that time away from the facility well. Get that cut. Sit in the comfy chair. To be an MOP in this league, first, you need that MVP experience from Sport Clips. Look good, feel good, play good. A guy who does all of those things is Trevor Harris. He's now doing it in a different color uniform, but he's talking about not his uniform and where he's looking, but where he's looking in terms of his reads. And his comments about that had you a little bit perturbed, fair to say?
It was interesting to me. I don't know if I believe it. How about that? I just don't know if I believe it, or I don't like it. If I'm a receiver on that team, or I'm a star receiver, which he has, that he brought over with him from Ottawa to Edmonton, I don't like what he said. And what he said, I mean, it was just in a huddle or a scrum after practice here during camp, and asking about, Trevor Harris trying to find some chemistry with Tavares Daniels and Ricky Collins Jr. and some of the new guys that he's going to be working with in Edmonton there, and asked if his familiarity with Greg Ellingson would have him trying to get the ball more to Greg because they have that connection. And Trevor kind of shut it down and said, no, my reads in the offense take me to where I'm throwing the football. So I will never, his quote was, I will never force the ball to anybody. Well, sometimes it's just player speak, quarterback speak, and you're just talking in the interview but not really thinking about what you're saying, or not really maybe believing it. Or to be honest, you might not care because you're just trying to finish the interview and get back to your dorm for lunch, which I've done it, and I get it. But do you believe that that's the case, DJ? And if it is the case, do you agree with it? Because I sure as heck don't. I would be unhappy if I heard that and I was Jason Moss. I might not say it publicly because you want to sound like, yeah, you just go through your reads and you don't force any pressure. But I'm getting the ball to Greg Ellingson as much as I can because of that connection. And yes, you go through. I'm not saying don't go through your reads, but get the ball to the guy that's your star receiver, the guy that you have a relationship with. Yes, I'm going to force it to him at times because that's attack your best player when you can. Get him the ball when you can.
Sometimes two things can be true. And is he being 100% honest? No. But is he lying? No. I do think he goes through his reads, deciding where he's going to go with the football based on what the defense does. However, Jason Moss makes sure that his number one receiver is number one in that read progression. So by default, if he's winning his one-on-one battles, if he's winning at the top of the route, you're going to him with the football. And again, in situations where nobody is open, will you go back to him and trust him? Yes. And open is relative for everyone. When you get down to number three, number four in that progression, those guys got to be a little bit more open for you to be able to trust them with the ball. Where Harris has a relationship with Ellingson, he knows back shoulder, I'm good. He's not going to make a fool out of me. I can throw it up. I can let him make a play on it because I know that he's going to fight for it. And if he doesn't catch it, nobody else is going to. So I do think he goes through his read progression. I do think he's an equal opportunist in terms of where his head is looking. But is he an equal opportunist on how long that head is looking as he goes through that read progression? Hell no. And nor should he. Right. And when those other receivers earn that trust, they'll get more rope and they'll get more football.
The Edmonton Eskimos, to start this season, have more pressure on them, I believe, than any other team. Just because of how, first of all, expectations in Edmonton are high. How that season ended last year when you have a MOP caliber quarterback and you're not playing in the playoffs. Also, the spending of in the offseason, going out and paying all those guys. I feel like there was a lot of high priced and high profile free agents brought over that need to gel and come together. And I feel like that fan base is probably, you know, starting get a little bit restless. And I feel like the way they start is going to be important. And I feel they have a good football team, so they should start out fine. I do think they have a lot of pressure. If you look at everyone else and compare, I would say they have more pressure than most.
I agree with you. I will add a caveat to that. That pressure goes up directly related to how well Mike Riley and the BC Lions do. Because if they got off to a flying start and it looks like it's a two-team division with BC and Calgary, or three-team if Winnipeg is as good as we think they might be, and Edmonton, after all the money they spent, falls behind because they didn't spend it in terms of retaining the quarterback that they developed into an all-star.
Oof. On paper.
You thought there was a hot seat in Edmonton before. That seat gets much hotter.
Let's just call it how it is. The seats are hot.
Well, you can't miss the playoffs.
No, the seats are hot. It is what it is, and the people who are in those seats are aware of this, so it's not game-changing. The seats are hot. On paper, in the West right now, I'll put you on the spot a bit, but on paper, where do you slot the Eskimos in on paper right now? This is the preseason.
It's tough because feel like if I say fourth, that's disrespect. Even though I think four of the top five teams in the league are in the West. But for me, I think it's three or four. I think it's a toss-up. I don't think they are the class of the West right now. I still have love for Calgary, even though they've had more change than normal. And I just think when you get one of the best two, maybe best quarterback in the league, in BC, that's a game changer for your building as well. So I'm going to say they're in that next tier with Winnipeg. But we want to know what you have to say. Hit us up on Twitter. Like, favorite, share, subscribe this very podcast. We will have much more to say about how those training camp battles are panning out and what this new CFL CBA means. But more importantly, Davis, football is back.
It's back. You talked about the Bombers. We'll get on. We'll talk about. I got some things about Winnipeg, particularly how their roster looks. We talked about their offensive line, the interior of it, but the lack of change and the stability that they have there, and kind of taking a deep dive at looking at that roster and where they sit. And next week, I want to follow up on that. Some perspective on the continuity that they have and where I see this football team because of that.
Perfect. Well, we will have that for you next week on The Waggle. Thanks for listening.